The publishing world has moved on from indignation to optimism after the Pulitzer Board failed to award a prize in fiction this year. The panel couldn't agree on which book to choose: Swamplandia by Karen Russell, The Pale King by the late David Foster Wallace, which was completed by his editor, or Train Dreams by Dennis Johnson. After a period of collective outrage, publishers are now saying that maybe the non-award is a good thing. Their rationale is that all three finalists will get a boost from the publicity. Steve Almond is our literary critic, and he has yet a different take. He says it's ridiculous to even try to judge winners and losers in art. And Steve is with us to talk more about that. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
So, Steve, first give us your take on this controversy and why you think the award really shouldn't matter that much.
Well, this actually applies to the Grammys and even to some extent to the Oscars. Everybody goes into a movie theater or picks up a book or listens to a song and they have a different experience. And it's a human experience. It's not a box score. This isn't a game that people are playing. They have a very complicated way that the art interacts with their own emotional lives. And to try to reduce that in this typically American way to, you know, who won and who lost is just silly.
Although it's not just American, in some ways it's human nature to want to say who's first, who's second, who's third.
Well, yeah, but we have like five or six of these. We've got the National Book Award, the National Book Critics Circle Award, and the LA Times Award, and the Story Prize, and the Penn Hemingway, and the Pulitzer. Yeah, they have the Man and the Booker over in England, and the Orange Prize as well, but we're like the capital of this way of keeping score. It's like late model capitalism has to say who's the winner, who's the loser, which is the commodity you should value.
So for those who aren't familiar with how this winnowing down process in the Pulitzer works, give us the quick thumbnail of how we get from several hundred nominees to three finalists.
Right. Well, three people are chosen. In this case, it was a novelist and a couple of very good book critics were chosen to read like 300 books, all the great books of fiction that came out. And they winnowed those down, God knows how, to lots of caffeine probably, and they love to read, down to three finalists. Those finalists were then handed to a board of 18 people who are on the Pulitzer board. The catch is that the majority of them have to agree that one of those three books is the best. And the problem with that, Sasha, obviously, is the books are very different, and they have probably, these readers have a different take on each of them. What if six of them say, this one, Pale King, was the best, this one, Swamplandia, was the best? Then there's no winner unless 10 of them, 10 out of the 18, can agree that one book was, quote-unquote, the best, whatever that means.
And we should note here that the Pulitzer board or the Pulitzer sort of body defended itself basically by saying this isn't meant to be a statement about fiction in general. It's just a statement that no one was able to receive a majority.
Right. But that process, in other words, if you're going to make these three people read 300 books and, find what they feel are the three best, it just makes sense to do maybe what they do like in parliamentary elections, just rank them 1, 2, 3, and whoever gets the best score wins. There are lots of easy ways that they could have avoided this controversy. That being said, here we are talking about those books. To me, what's interesting about these contests, Sasha, about all of them, is not the winner or loser. It's the deliberations. The most fascinating thing you could do with all these contests is to have a transcript of the conversation that these people have. Because that way, anyway, they'd be talking about the books rather than saying, book A wins for whatever mysterious reason.
Steve Almond, in many ways, you say Pulitzer, overrated. But Ann Patchett, big-name author, bel canto, state of wonder, she recently opened a brick-and-mortar bookstore herself, I think down in Louisiana. She wrote in a New York Times op-ed that the publishing industry needs this award now more than ever because book sales are faltering, and it injects excitement and probably spurs book sales.
Well, I think the controversy has will spur more book sales than having declared a winner. And here we are talking about three works of literature. However, tangentially, we were talking about those books. We're mentioning them. I am exhorting everybody to go out and find them. And by the way, the articles that have been written about this brouhaha have managed to mention a bunch of other great books. My favorite book of the year was Edith Perlman's Binocular Vision, which was a brilliant, breathtaking, amazing book of stories that wasn't even in the final three.
Right, and Ann Patchett's op-ed was basically a great reading list of suggested
books. That's exactly
books.
Right. So she now has the pretext to talk about literature, but even more interesting for me would be to get smart people talking about books, to actually be talking about what David Foster Wallace is doing when he discusses the nature of boredom and bureaucracy and modern consciousness, or Karen Russell's amazingly inventive way of sort of gently pointing to the surrealism of the fact that the state of Florida exists in the first place in her wonderful novel Swamplandia. That's what I want to hear about, the actual literature, not the kerfuffle around who won and who lost.
Steve, you recently took part in an interesting exercise meant to test the credibility and lasting power of awards. You rejudged the 1960 National Book Award. Tell us how that came about and what it was meant to do.
Well, my friend Michael Griffith, who's a wonderful writer, had this great idea. He said, well, why don't we go back and look what sort of history has had to say about the books that won the National Book Award. And the first year was 1960. We looked at all the books. What won was Goodbye Columbus, a book, a novella and book of stories
by Philip Roth,
his first book. Wonderful book. But also under consideration that year was a wonderful Grace Paley collection, as well as Henderson the Rain King by Saul Bellow and Mrs. Bridge by Evan S. Cannell. Now, he had five writers basically write in praise of the book that they thought should have won, and then we all voted, and we voted overwhelmingly for Mrs. Bridge to win or Henderson the Rain King, because both of those are sensational, remarkable novels. And what we did, rather than just having a vote, is we wrote long essays about why those are special pieces of work, and the manner in which those authors have used the English language to transmit their love for those characters to readers. And that's the kind of useful discussion you can have around these award ceremonies, not the box score, but the actual play-by-play of what art does to us.
So a half century later, you came up with a different winner from the same pool of entrants.
And frankly, most people did. You know, if you ask most serious readers, whatever that means, hey, here's a list of books. Which of these books do you think is really the most important in terms of the enduring, you know, emotional and psychological work it does, and moral work, people would probably say, oh yeah, Henderson the Rain King and Mrs. Bridge are head and shoulders above Goodbye Columbus. That's not to say that Goodbye Columbus isn't a great book, but it's not as good as his later novels. It's sort of an apprentice work, and that's understood by readers at this point.
So you think looking back on this Philip Roth work from long ago, we now realize it really wasn't among his best because he's written so much better since.
Well, also just that it's a great book for what it is, but there were great works too, demonstrably, no one would argue, great books published in that year that stand the mark of time, that will speak to the generations as long as people are around reading. And there were, you know, other books and that were very, very good books, but that don't rise to that level. Having said that, maybe some listeners saying Goodbye Columbus is my favorite book in the world, and I don't argue with that. To me, the interesting thing is the discussion, not the winner.
Although, as you just said, Steve, you said demonstrably no one would argue they're among the best.
Right.
But as you said, reading is subjective.
That was nonsense. I was just saying that because I thought those other books were the best. But, you know, it's okay to have opinions. What I want to see is people having a conversation about what they love about particular books. I won't because I know it's not the forum for it, but I could go into a rhapsody about the beautiful sentences and the kind of emotional human work that Saul Bellow is doing in Henderson the Rain King, or that Grace Paley is doing in Little Disturbances of Man, or that Philip Roth is doing in Goodbye Columbus. And that wouldn't be to say one is better than the other. That would be to say they're all remarkable. Sit down. Put your device away. Read.
Although in the end, Steve Ahmed, if you were to win one of these big awards, do you
think I would, of course, completely reverse course and say, no, I would be even more interested, because as a hardcore narcissist, I would say, not only did I win, but I want everybody to tell people why I won.
Steve Ahmed is our literary critic. His most recent book is God Bless America. You can go to hereandnow.org to read his essay on why he thought Mrs. Bridge by Evan Cannell should have won the 1960 National Book Award. Steve, thank you.
Absolutely. I just want to note for all of my legion of fans out there that unfortunately God Bless America also did not win the Pulitzer this year.
Well, there's people and more people. What do they know?